There's misconception about yoga teachers nowadays is yoga teachers have to be strong. We have to be really positive and we must be happy. And that's not true. We also are a human being. We are also holding space for one another.
Hey guys, today we're excited to have Delia Leung, the founder of Yoga Space 108, a Nike yoga trainer and co-founder of Mindful Movement, joining us. Delia is a good friend of mine and has an amazing journey transitioning from a career in finance to becoming a yoga educator and motivational speaker. With nearly 1,000 hours of training under the legendary Sri Dharmamitra, Delia has inspired audiences worldwide with her insights on mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. Today, she'll share her wellness journey with us and how embracing growth, imperfection, and being present is the true essence of mindfulness. Hi, Delia. Thank you so much for joining us on the Nucci podcast today.
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so let's go right into it. I have known you for, I think, a million years now at this point, since we danced ballet together. But tell me about your journey.
So I guess the root of the journey has to somehow go back to ballet. In university, I started to switch from ballet to yoga, which my first class was brought by my mom. I remember back in the days in Hong Kong, there was no other big studios like nowadays. There's no modern yoga. There's no wellness trends. There's nothing. So I was basically really contributing my first practice to an Indian teacher in his place next to a refrigerator. And that time I was like stuck in a yoga mat, very old yoga mat, and my mom was next to me and the refrigerator was next to us. And I was like, wow, this is really not something cool. I went back the second time, I went back the third time, still sitting and standing next to the fridge. And somehow I find myself hooked. So fast forward, I came back to Hong Kong from London after studying university, and I did psychology, and also I did a law degree. I came back with a job in law firm and subsequently working in banking. And one day when I was looking at my boss, she was also a woman, and I asked myself, hey, okay, this is it, right? You get promotion, you get a lot of flying experiences with your boss, with your traders, and also a lot of like next accomplishment on your corporate ladder. Is this really, really what I want? So I started to really go one layer deeper again. And that moment I felt like, which resonates with my guru so much, is it's almost feeling like peeling one layer of the onion and then another layer of the onion. So the more onion layer that you peel, the essence of the onion becomes sweeter. It doesn't become sweeter, but what I mean is you feel the texture of the onions become softer and it's more sweet, right? So the crust is always very hard. It's always like it's trying to protect your essence. You are not sure what you really want in your life. And when you peel one layer off, you started to notice, I actually really like that feeling. I really like that connection within myself and the yoga mat. So I went to New York for a business trip and subsequently for my holiday. And one day I met my teacher, my guru. His name is Sri Dharmamitra. He looks like this. So I found his book, and this is the first book that I have had with him. He came in, 60 of us in New York, Flatiron, super busy city, ambulance running back and forth, lighting, everyone shouting in the street, so noisy in the street, right? And there was no AC, and I went in. And that moment when I went in, I was like, aha, I felt home. So I paid at the receptionist, and the second moment that I felt like this is like an ashram in India. So I took off my shoes, I went into the classroom. They call it shala, like a practice area, not really called a classroom. So I sat down and started to warm up. Everyone around me was really focused on their warm up. No one was talking, and everyone was so humble. That humbleness you can really feel from the energy of the movement up to the fingertips, and it's so abstract that it's really, really beyond words I can describe. So he came in and he sat down. Unlike how we normally start in other classroom setting, he made us sit down and chanted a super, super huge vibration of Om. And that Om, which is the universal, the highest vibration in our consciousness, gave me a huge goosebumps. And that goosebumps, you can imagine, you can't lie to this body sensation. You can't pretend that you had that feeling, and you can't pretend that you did not have that feeling. But that feeling was just from my feet. Zoom, it just went up like crazy, and I did not know what happened. Felt like some scene in a drama or in a film setting. Then he made us sit down to do a few rounds of breathing, and he started to talk about karma and reincarnation. Then I was like, oh my god, I paid this couple of dollars, I don't know, I forgot already, around 15 or 20 bucks. What am I signing up for, right? Because in my head, my banking head or the left brain kicked in. I was like, is this worthwhile? Is this worth the money? Is this worth my time? So I started to notice there were a lot of internal dialogue, or even embarrassingly, I would say it's a lot of internal criticism before or even when I allow the teacher or the audience gave me that experience, right? So the topic on karma and reincarnation talked about the subtle energy of oneself, talk about the oneness of the world. Let's say Steph and me, we are the same. We talk about why we come back to this lifetime and to reborn again, to pick up the lessons that we have to learn. And these topics were so fascinating that I somewhat felt like I went back to my London University to having a lecture somehow, somewhere about the psychological aspects, the emotional aspects of oneself. And the next moment when I opened my eye, I found myself tearing. So I went with my friend, and my friend looked at me and was like, oh my God, what's happening with you? Why are you so pretentious? Why are you doing this? But that moment, that ding moment, or that split second, was so blissful that I found the tears were not happy, not unhappy, but it was just so pure. I felt like this is like a purification of oneself. So I continued the class. I went back home and went back to Hong Kong. And beforehand, I also attended another class called the Yoga Nidra, which is the sleeping meditation. Sleeping meditation, basically you did nothing and you lie down for 90 minutes. 90 minutes doing nothing, and he would just talk, whatever that he was talking, yapping. Don't ask me why. I signed up again, although at the same time, my left brain was like, what? I pay to sleep? And that time, modern yoga, wellness, there's nothing, right? I'm talking about 10 years or 12 years ago. I went in again. So basically, Dharma really put me into a very, very safe space. And I dropped into that space and I did not know where I traveled to. After 90 minutes, I felt super recharged. I felt like I slept for so many hours. And there was, of course, scientific research and support to back why Yoga Nidra is so nice. And it was so, so rejuvenating for people to go in. So came back to Hong Kong. After a few days, I resigned. So I went back to Dharma, went back to New York for my teacher's training. And this is how I started my yoga journey and my offering.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey with me. I wanted to, you know, I think that you touched on a few points that, you know, the yoga that you first practiced in, you know, in university, on the mat, it was very, very serious. To fast forward today, you know, many years later, there has been a huge shift and there's a lot more options in the market, right? I remember, you know, for myself, when I practiced yoga, it just felt like a very, very slow practice, right? So can you talk a little bit about that and how you found Dharma and how you picked Dharma as your specialty?
I would say I'm really lucky. It's not me choosing him or this lineage, it's they choose me. You know, I always believe in connection. And also, there must be a reason that why one meet another. Let's say why I meet a cat after so many decades that I never really thinking of owning a pet. You know, mm-hmm. So all these interesting relationship is kind of meant to be, and they only happen perfectly at a perfect timing with a perfect reason. So for this lineage particularly, I felt like it's really, really time when I'm open up to myself, really, really honest to myself, not lying to, let's say, okay, what corporate ladder I want to climb, what promotion that I wanted to get in banking, how would I want to perceive and also to pursue my, you know, the cliche family, the kind of thing in Hong Kong. Then I started to unwind. And the moment when I unwind, relax, and really go with my own flow, things that are meant to be for me will come. And this is always about the space. In the wellness space, we are talking about you allowing that vibrational energy to come into your life and to help you to be a better person and ultimately to discover yourself.
And so I think that, you know, with yoga and meditation, right? I think that, you know, when we practice together, you're always telling me to breathe and to really, you know, let everything go. Talk me through a little bit more about that and how in today, in our lives, it's so busy, right? And it's so hard to sort of focus and really feel yourself. Like how do you incorporate that into the practice?
So busy cities like Hong Kong, New York, or London, we always talk about the body and mind connection. Yeah. How do you go to one studio and to do some sort of exercises so that you feel, I know where my chest is, I know where my shoulder is, I can really feel my face. Things like that. This is actually as easy as like this, right? So you can technically practice every single second, even now. The moment, this very moment, I trust that our palms and also our forearms are on the desk, then you slowly draw the attention, that consciousness onto that contact. This is already the first step of the mind and body connection. In modern days, we create a lot of doctrine, systems, techniques, skills, and trying to create, recreate, invent, reinvent many systems to be learned and to be adopted by modern people. But think about it, ultimately, isn't it everything kind of the same? We are always talking about the essence of, okay, when you take a deep breath in, you feel your lungs, you feel your rib cage, you also felt at ease. This is simply because you're connected to your body, which ultimately brings down to the connection to the nervous system.
Yeah.
There's so many techniques, but we always forget about the principles of the techniques. It's not about learning more and more techniques to somewhat. I know some of the students get so confused by different techniques. They were like, they go to me, hey, Delia, this teacher say this, that teacher says this. Which one is correct? You know, all these techniques sometimes become more confusing. In traditional Eastern yoga, you realize as we practice, many poses are of nature names. For example, mountain pose, lizard pose. Downward facing dog, dancer pose, what else? Lizard or butterfly. These are all animals and insects. If you really understand the root and the traditional reason and the essence of the pose, you are not only talking about the technique of how to go into and come out from the pose and how to breathe when you were holding a pose, you are basically becoming the pose.
Yeah.
You're not trying to confuse and to complicate things in modern life, given that we are already very complicated. The society is already complicated. Meanwhile, we're trying to let go of things. So in my teaching, or I would not say teaching really, I would say it's a sharing, an offering. Every piece of teaching or class to me is an offering. In yoga, we call it the bhakti yoga. Bhakti means devotion. When you teach a class, it often comes to what is the intention of the teaching or the offering? Are you offering a service or are you teaching just because you want to get fame and money? You, one teacher or any individual, you have to be really clear about your own intention of the task. When you're clear, the energy shifts, the energy is different, and the recipient, which is the student on the yoga mat, they really can feel it. You pretend and you remember the script. You stand behind a 60 people yoga classroom. You can easily get day by day gone so easy. You will still have a lot of followings. There will be a lot of people liking your style and your teaching and your technique. But are you really that lizard? Or are you really, really that butterfly? That's another story. So when I practice or when I offer my devotion on my surface, I always come back to the intention. And in Sanskrit, we call intention sankalpa. It's almost like starting a project. Where is your vision? Sure, we need to somewhat to put the commercial aspects in it. However, are you also taking care about the real deal, which is, are you allowing yourself and also the audience, which for me is the student, are you allowing your student to consciously grow with you while they are in the lizard pose? Are they are really trying to let go of all the fear, the tension, of the muscle contraction? So for me, often I would not say practicing or doing the traditional, the modern yoga is about gaining knowledge. Mm-hmm. On top of gaining knowledge, we also are letting go a lot of things, including what I mentioned just now, the fear, letting go all the blockage of becoming who you really are. So it's now talking about the authenticity of the practice, right? And how to who you truly are. Because I truly believe, and I genuinely believe, we are all just walking each other home. Quoted by a very powerful and influential spiritual teacher, his name is Ram Dass. I listened to a lot of podcasts of him during a pandemic. Before pandemic, I almost signed up for his last retreat in Maui. He could not walk anymore, but he attracted so many beautiful souls going to chant and sing with him. But unfortunately, one winter, he passed. So everyone has their own fate, and we have to really work and also to learn a lesson to become one step closer to the essence of that onion that I mentioned.
Yeah. I think that, you know, you touched upon how, you know, the ancient practices of yoga has really modernized today, right? That it can really meet us where we are for people that want to dabble into yoga, who, you know, practice yoga, and I'd say like 2-3 times a week, right? But maybe they haven't traveled to India or they haven't met their guru yet, right? So can you tell me a little bit about that, right? So how is the form modernized, right? And, you know, I think that when somebody like for myself, when I do yoga, I want to go and I want to say, I want to master this pose. Like, I want to be able to do this lizard. And that's my goal, to like be the best at like this lizard. And then I'm going to go do that headstand, right? We're so goal oriented, but it's hard to really sometimes step back to think, why am I doing yoga? And like setting that intention and having that sort of transform you as like a whole being, right? That you forget why you're doing yoga, because I'm like, this is my exercise, right? So yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I always remind myself how I met Dharma Mitra, which was goalless. So I stepped into his ashram or shala, and what we call it in our space is called, we surrender. I surrender myself into that practice among the sea of 60 people. He did not know me and I did not know him, but somehow, somewhat, the connection was so unique and special that, you know, this path is meant to be for you. The reason why I teared, I cried, I had so much feelings and sensation, I'm not falling in love with him. He's 85 nowadays. He's not really that handsome anyway. So basically, he's like an old man standing in front of the stage, having this mic, doing his poses. This is what really dial back to the concept of devotion that I mentioned. It's about, are you first enjoying yourself in that practice or in that path? If you are not, which means it's okay, you can step off the yoga mat, do something else. There's so many tons of mindfulness practice nowadays. We have tea ceremony, we have flower arrangement. You can also go for forest bathing. Choose something that in Buddhist teaching we call something that you feel resonating with. This is the first barrier. You don't want to create an extra barrier that, oh my God, I'm so stiff, I force myself to go to do a split. That's not okay. Yeah. You're going to hurt yourself. So go and do something that first you enjoy. And the reason why we enjoy different activities have to dial back to our childhood, our upbringing, our exposure, or where you were brought up. So everyone, think about it. Everyone, we are all different. So do something that first you like. Then, like peeling the onion once again, you go in, you sink in, and you really drop into that space. Give it like 2 months, 3 months, and see if you really enjoy and liking it. Of course, everything at the beginning is going to be tough, but if it is for you, it will definitely be for you.
Yeah. Wait, sorry. So you said forest bathing. I've never heard of that. And where can you do something like that. I know that you travel everywhere across Asia, and, you know, so, but I've never really, yeah, definitely have no exposure to forest bathing.
It is a very amazing practice. You can technically get certified in Hong Kong. Previous years, I helped in Li Ka Shing Foundation in the Chi San mm-hmm. Monastery. And that monastery provide a very, very calming and breathtaking ambience for people to go in to have the solemn moment for themselves. They also provide certification of different courses, for example, the forest bathing. So forest wow. bathing technically is you forest nature connection. It's created and invented by Japanese, not sure how many years ago, but this practice is amazing. In last November, I went to Awaji Island to host my retreat. So one of the sessions was the forest bathing. I had an old experienced man coming in to explain the ginkgo leaf. As we walk into the forest, we could listen to our own footstep, listen to the stream, the water, and the river, and how the wind blow onto our face, the skin, and also the smells of some leaves. So this is really about stimulating and connecting your five senses while you're walking into forest. And the forest is like the biggest healer on Mother Earth. Imagine you have unhappy thoughts, sad, and you are going through grieving, anything basically. Even when you are arguing with your husband, you have something, you have grudge or resentment, you can take off your shoes and your socks, walk bare feet, and basically imagine the earth hug you, and all your negativity and your unhappy thoughts get sent through your soles of your feet. This is really powerful to let go of your own, I would say, the not so good energy.
Right. Wow, that sounds magical.
These energies are so subtle that you can't really see, right? We're talking about another conscious level. When I'm talking to you, when I'm talking to another friend, we have different vibe. In modern days, we call it vibe, right? Hmm. This is a very cool vibe. This is a very... This is a very hip vibe. This club has whatever house techno vibe music. This kind of vibe is about the energy or the vibration between you and that friend or that space. So that energy is so subtle that if you talk to a student, if the student is sad, you never know who comes to your class. Some people come into my class with a promotion just got announced in the firm. Some people come to my class with a discussion on divorce 1 hour ago. So yeah. Everyone carry different emotion when they let go things on the yoga mat. And imagine how much one can hold space for a day. Really cannot, because I also have my own thing. I'm also a human being. There's misconception about yoga teachers nowadays is yoga teachers have to be strong. We have to be really positive and we must be happy. And that's not true. We also are a human being. We are also holding space for one another. So forest bathing is like the best thing on earth for us to also unwind and also to, in psychology term, we call it the debrief, right? The psychologist go and do counseling for a patient. That counselor or that psychologist also have to go to someone else to get debriefed. So imagine yeah. the forest is debriefing you and it's very right. healing, very, very wow. heartwarming.
I think that sounds amazing. I'd love to come forest bathing sometime. I know that you also did some calligraphy on the trip as well, mm-hmm. as well as the meditation sessions and yoga. How does that all sort of complement and work towards together to sort of build that wholeness and also, you know, where you can alternate or transform your energy and let things go? How does that all work?
The love of me, okay, let me do this again. It's something that I really like hosting retreats is we are doing this collectively and we are also doing it as a oneness. I always imagine, let's say 10 people attending my retreats, 20 people attending my retreats. I visualize the 10 of us or the 20 of us are like within one bubble. We are bouncing against the wall of the bubble. We are also brushing the shoulders of another friend or other participants here and there. And this collision and that chemistry lasts for the next few days. So for the one in November, it was 4 days, 3 nights. And this chemistry or the vibe in that bubble, it depends, and also it's co-creating through everyone's energy, including all the breaths, the conversations that everyone is holding, the drinks, the food, the ambience, the forest, and finally to the activities. For example, the asana practice on the yoga mat, the meditation, what you're exactly thinking within the meditation, what intention you want to set when you're writing to calligraphy, how you're holding the cup. Are you letting go things, or are you trying to gain things from Delia? Things like that. These are all contained within that bubble, and it will mature accordingly to its perfect condition. When I say perfect, it's not the perfect definition in Oxford Dictionary, but perfect means it's we are enough, this is enough, right? And this energy or the vibration got raised up or got pulled down, it can also get pulled down accordingly at its right moment. So for the Chinese calligraphy or the tea ceremony or to explore in the forest, these are all mindfulness practice. And when we set the intention right, meaning when you really, really pay attention to or becoming aware of what is the brushstroke like? Are you really present? Checking in with your emotions? Are you here and now? All these can elevate. And think about it, within the bubble, you are helping yourself grow.
Yeah.
Raising your energy, you're also raising the other energy because we are also part of the bubble. And that
yeah.
is what or the collective consciousness. And back
yeah.
in our school and back in our shala, Dharma always says, if you are not in mood to do yoga, do it at home. Don't affect the person next to you. We don't have mirror in our shala, which is something that I find very, very bizarre when I first practiced there. I was like, where's the mirror? I'm so used to checking my alignment, how my hips is my shoulder relaxed, is my collarbone relaxed, things like that. We are so distracted by the mirror. But when the mirror is taking away, every thought, every breath counts. When every breath or even the energy of your fingertips counts, you, I hope, somehow you feel bad if you are not really offering at your best, because you're really attracting the not so good energy and you are affecting the person next to you.
Yeah, I love that. I think that, you know, especially since, you know, when you talked upon calligraphy, right? I think you talked about calligraphy as meditation, but a lot of people, for myself, when I used to do calligraphy, I wanted it to get the best, right? You wanted it to be perfect, just as the way that you talked about, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror, right? With ballet, we were always looking at ourselves in the mirror. Are you turned out? How do you look? Are you looking presentable? Like, that's all sort of that playing into that. Today, we do things for results, right? It's about results driven. It's very outward looking. And you don't realize that even something like calligraphy, where I don't know when was the last time I picked up a Chinese calligraphy pen or brush, but it's how that practice can really be such an inner sort of practice to bring out that energy and for you to really just feel that meditative state. I find that fascinating.
Something that I find it really blessed is my mom came to my retreat this time. So she fairly successful Chinese calligrapher. And it's so interesting to see how she laid out her table very differently compared to other students. I was like, wow, she's on that autopilot mode, setting up her pen like this, doing this and this, until the moment when she turned to the next page, everything was in Japanese, which I did it on purpose. And when the characters are in Japanese, it's so fascinating for me to see her face and also other students' face. They were like, oh, so how? So there was this
little... I don't know how to write in Japanese, right?
There was this very little paper translating the essence of the paragraph. Every day we had different paragraph, different article. One is on how to embrace your life. Another one, I remember it was about compassion and how to share more compassion and forgiveness to one another. But first you have to really forgive and give compassion to yourself. And the next one, if I remember correctly, it was about death and dying and to show us how we perceive impermanence. But interestingly, all the characters are in Japanese. And I was like, ha, okay, this is interesting. Let me see how they're going to tackle this. So you can see the practice and the ultimate intention and the purpose of practice is not about perfecting the character. It's about allowing them to really read and contemplate on the content and then to write. You don't need to write at your best effort because we don't know what is the best character should look, the how it should be looked. But it's more about you are just be this. This vocabulary is, trust me, I'm still working on it so hard. I would believe that this is really one of my life lessons. To just be and no judging and to give as much compassion as you can to myself is not as easy as you think. As the time goes by when you're doing the writing, you'll be like, oh, am I writing too fast? And I'm writing too slow. What are the people doing right now? Why they stopped? What time is it now? Am I writing too slow? Things like that. Then you will start to have a lot of comparisons. You'd think about something so external that is not even about this. So being B is constantly my day-to-day, almost like an alarm on my phone. Hey, you have to be a bit, you know? And this is the purpose of all the mindfulness practice and the meditation on the breath work or the yoga. And when we talk about yoga, yoga is such a big word. It's almost like some big headings. Hey, I hate the world. I love the world. So what does that even mean? What does that even entail? Yoga is such a big word that is consisted of breathing, breath work, yoga philosophy, meditation. And ultimately, you're trying to achieve and also to understand your own self. Yoga is always, always with the highest purpose, which is to understand and discover who you truly are. It's not about perfecting the dancer pose. Sure, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, everyone, we need to go through that stage. We have to understand and go through that stage to really generate the energy of why we are working so hard on the yoga mat. We have to be more flexible. We have to be in control about alcohol consumption, not to drink too much, not to eat too much, so that you can become a little bit more flexible, a little bit stronger to hold in a pose. Sure, of course, this is about one of the limbs. There are 8 limbs in yoga, and this is one very important limb in yoga, which is the asana. Then asana, the more you practice, the longer that you practice, you also have to embrace and love your body so much that you'd be like, hey, it's okay. I give birth to two kids. I lost the lizard. It's also okay. Right? And hey, I just fly back from London. It's also okay not to be able to hold a 2 minutes or 3 minutes headstand. We wake up with different condition, and only when you are really allowing, the conflicts between you and yourself will diminish. You can imagine if a conflict is still there, you'll be like holding so much, muscles tense up, muscles contract, then everything will become tight. Tight, chest can't open, ribcage cannot relax and puff up. Everything becomes so tight. This is why when people practice backbend, when they are not heart open, they are not relaxed enough, there's always tension there. And it's real. It's all about emotion. It's about that layer of the body.
Yeah. I think that you touched upon, you know, previously when you spoke about just being and just be, I like that sort of, you know, that's something that I feel like we in the modern day don't think about in your day-to-day, right? It's so hard to just be and to be so comfortable with yourself, right? Your authentic self is what you touched upon. Do you think that sort of, you know, where does that sort of philosophy come from? And is that, I know you did a lot of Buddhism practice. Like, does that come from there, or is there influence from that very Eastern ancient philosophies?
When you mention about Buddhism, I think there are two powerful practices that I really cherish and I I am so grateful that I did it like a few times. So one of the practices is the Vipassana. So Vipassana is not so much Buddhism, and it also actually emphasizes it has nothing to do with any religion. But Vipassana is a practice that allows you to go into the center for 10 days, not to talk, phone got confiscated, no eye contact with another participant, and you're just by yourself from what? 4 a.m. when you wake up until around 8:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. before you sleep. Wow. So you can imagine there were so many internal dialogues that you have to digest. And interestingly, apart from the nature or the forest, you also cannot let go of things through journaling or through yoga practice or through other breathwork practice, apart from those they introduced. I hesitated for so many years because one of the biggest. I love journaling so much. I used to have so many journals, stack them all, and I lock them. And I also even visualize the day when I pass, I will hide them under the big beech and to burn it or to do a fire ceremony for it. And that connection between me and my pen, I love the flow of the pen. And also the thoughts just came in without any judgment. It's just me and myself, internal dialogue. For Vipassana, the 10 days, I really get to surrender to the most naked side of myself, which is the vulnerability. If you can't focus, it's okay. You don't focus. You just wander off, catch yourself, catch your mind wandered, and you invite the mind to come back. And it's completely fine. Of course, we can't focus 10 days. 16 hours a day, that's impossible, that's almost crazy. But the more that you observe, it's one step forward to, again, to the essence of the onion. And you truly would know where to take a pause, where to give yourself a breather, how you can pull yourself back, things like that. And that's number one. And the second one is the academic study in Hong Kong University for the Masters in Buddhism. This is technically more academic, actually super academic. I almost forgot a master's degree. We are required to write a dissertation. And it's horrible, you know, after so many years. But putting down the pen, I'm like, oh my God, what am I signing up for myself, right? But this one is so mind-blowing that every time I sit in a lecture hall, I felt like every sharing and every lecture slide is very intellectually provocative. I like the intellectual stimulation part of a study, of a religion, of the philosophies within the religion. And one thing that I realize is everything must pass and everything is not permanent. And that's one of the very important Buddhist teaching of how do you embrace the concept of impermanence, including your body, including your face, including your wrinkles, including the dancer pose or the headstand whatsoever on the yoga mat, right? So when you see in Vipassana, the meditation retreat, when you see your thought arise, you also see the thought cease. So it's a cycle like life and death. Everything rises, everything also ceases. And it's so beautiful that it's like the circle, it's like I really like the shape of circle because it's never ending unless you're enlightened. You have to come back and you have to pick up the homework from wherever and to continue your journey. And every journey, the more you study, the more you practice, sometimes the more lonely you feel. You feel like, this is my own path. I have my husband, I have my boyfriend, I have all my friends and my parents, but still, this is my own homework. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. feel quite lonely, just like ourselves building our own platforms, building our own businesses. You don't understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
We are in different stage of life. Don't say that, oh, I feel you, you don't feel me. But it's also okay. The loneliness also will pass. And this is something that I find a very powerful message in one of the Vipassana experiences. So in one of the retreats, I came out and I let go of the journaling practice. I journal much less now.
Did. And how does that feel?
Wow. You know, journaling, ultimately, I did not notice that was an attachment for me too.
Interesting.
I was clinging so much on that feeling, that sensation. I was yearning for that desire to, oh my God, I want to journal. I want to go back to that cave. And again, it's about how you perceive the activity of journaling. Overdoing it is attaching, is like a drug. But if you're doing it in moderation, completely fine. It's very, very healthy mindfulness practice too.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. I've actually never thought of that, to have a practice become too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's something that can be, right? In today's world, right? You're always wanting to, there are a lot of like peaks and troughs, right? But there's a lot less sort of balance, right, in this world today. And I think that that's something that we don't think about enough, right? Sort of that balance, that longevity, how does it come together all holistically? So that's definitely something that for me to at least to think about.
Oh, there's a lot. You know, in modern days, in this wellness trend, there are so many new techniques and systems coming up in the market. Everyone talks about biohacking nowadays. We are talking about vitamins. We're talking about a lot of things. And during pandemic, I remember there was this very, very dear, we call it the Dharma Yoga brother. So he's my dear friend. And also I treat him like an older brother looking out for me, looking after me. And he's based in Colombia in South America. We FaceTime one time. We talked for hours. And the final question he threw to me was, "Hey sis, how's your yoga practice on the yoga mat? Now Hong Kong is like half locked down. You can't go to studios." And I'm like, "Oh, I dropped that for quite some time. I only practice maybe once a week." And he said, "Good, but just don't forget about your breath work. Don't forget about your meditation in moderation though." So he sees there's a so huge pattern of attaching on, I must go to yoga practice. I must because I look cool. I'm a vegetarian because I look fancy. I'm doing this biohacking thing because every of my friends is doing it. But oftentimes we don't know why we're spending so much money on doing this. Number one, spending too much time. Is it really for your own self? Is it just because you are feeling insecure about yourself? That's why it's, can you see? It's like a reverse mechanism of what wellness truly means. You feel insecure, then you got hooked into vitamins, into cold plunge, into whatever activities that were in the market. But do you really need it? Or can you have the courage to say no to that event? Is it more for social, or is it more for status? Is it more for fame just because everyone is doing it? And I think that's very important to contemplate.
Yeah, that's true. I think that, you know, when we are on socials, right, you're always looking at like, this is the wellness trend right now. Everybody's getting into like, you know, doing contrast therapy, doing that ice bath. How long can you stay in that ice bath for, right? There is so much of that. But what is that? What works for you, and what and why are you doing it, right? I think that's something to really think about and to come back to, because
it is important.
Yeah.
Important. And also it's you definitely have to keep curious, and you have to be curious like a kid to sniff, to smell things. Then after you try this and that, then you'll be like, oh, okay, this is not for me. Maybe for time being only, maybe in 3 months time, oh, I'm a big fan of cold plunge. That's also okay. That's completely fine. But next time when you sign up for whatever, pause. And that pause is so important for every day to day. When you ask me, hey, what do you do day to day? Or how do you keep reminding? How do people in modern society to remind themselves is to pause more.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
The longer the gap you can create, it's not being chicken, or it's not being hesitant. It's, hey, I have my own right to gain my own power back to my own hands before I make a decision, before I say a line, before I give out the energy. And this is already some very, very self-loving activity for your meditation every day.
I like that, taking pauses and being comfortable with that pause, which I think a lot of times is hard these days, because anytime there's a pause, I think, you know, you would probably look at your phone, right, to fill that gap and fill that pause. But I think that that's something that for me, I would take away, right? Because I love filling that I along with everybody else is filling that gap, right? Because you're so used to just being on the runs. Yeah. So Delia, I wanted to, you know, ask you one of the last questions. I've known you for, I don't even know, like 3 decades, is it? Are we aging each other? But I think that, you know, you're looking, like, what is your secret to looking and feeling your best?
That's a very good question. I think loving yourself is the secret. You have to love yourself enough to be able to also offer to the people, the environment, and the space. Love is the highest vibration and the highest energy, because I truly believe that everyone ultimately, be it you and an old man, be it you are a broken person, everyone wants to be loved, be seen, and be heard. And this is like no-brainer. It's like the most important ingredient on the recipe for everyone, right? And how do you cultivate that love is by really, really go naked and go inwards to your own self. If you feel, oh, this is so abstract, do something less abstract. Take off all your clothes in the toilet by yourself, no one else. Look into your own eyes. At one point in my life, I did something we call the mirror meditation, which is you look into yourself with, you can have your own clothes on, but you look into yourself in the mirror for maybe 3 minutes to 5 minutes. You will be surprised at the beginning of the stage. You felt, oh, this is so embarrassing looking at my own self. Why am I doing this? Oh, I look like this. Then many things surface, and those things, you will be surprised. And you will feel, wow, I can't believe that these things exist in my system, this body. And the longer that you look into yourself, or even trying to smell your hair, touch yourself, these are all like five senses. Do more five senses exercise with your own self. Then you feel, oh, it's actually also okay to be less perfect. The term perfect always inhibits us to move forward, especially modern day society or for women per se. But I truly believe that you don't have to be perfect. Trust me, I'm still working on this.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think that search for perfection these days are just on top of everybody's mind. So I think that's a great takeaway. Well, thank you so much. And for our listeners today, if they want to find you, where can they find you? How can we join your next retreat, I know, in Bhutan?
Exactly. So this year, I'm hosting a retreat in Bhutan in October. You can find more information on my webpage.
Thank you so much, and I will see you in Bhutan. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nuchi podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.